Well, hello, amazing folks. Welcome to another interesting episode of the podcast show, Trivia Talks. My name is Tarun Mundra, and in this episode, we are going to talk about the cryptocurrencies. To discuss about this topic, we have with us Ajit Khurana, sir. Ajit, sir, is an advisor, investor, author, speaker, mentor. He is also a former CEO of JetPay, which was the leading cryptocurrency exchange in India during 2018. In this conversation, we are going to discuss about the Lightning Network exchanges, business models, and also about the current environment for the crypto in India. Sir is also going to give us brief insight about the career opportunities for tech and non-tech students in the blockchain technology. The entire conversation is going to be very interesting. If you are a crypto enthusiast, you are going to learn a lot of things from this conversation. So without any further ado, let's dive into this amazing discussion with Ajit Khurana, sir. Let's go.
Okay. Well, hello, sir. Welcome to Trivia Talks. It's an honor having you on the show. Thank you so much for taking out time and joining this podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure and honor. I appreciate what you're doing and want to be part of it. Thanks.
Yeah. So, sir, one of the trendy thing which is currently in the entire world is cryptocurrency. And everyone is talking about it. Those who are not interested in it also want to get into it. So my first question to you is, how your journey started in this crypto world?
So you should know that I am a little older than the typical crypto participant. I am 51 years old. And because of that, I have, you know, had the opportunity to invest in many asset classes other than the usual ones, such as mutual fund, stock, real estate, and what have you. I have also been interested in finding relatively esoteric asset classes such as collectibles, art, and the like. Now, when I was 44 years old, which is in the year 2014, I started like getting a little attracted to the price movement of cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin only at that stage. I spent like probably 5 minutes, maybe 10, reading up about Bitcoin, and I thought, this is weird and bizarre and nonsense and will not work, because what are we talking about? Some electronic money which nobody owns, nobody creates, or everybody creates, as backed by nothing, etc. And the usual complaints that a lot of people have, I also had within the first few minutes, and then I rejected it. But it kept attracting me again and again, and it did not take me too long to realize that I was being narrow-minded in trying to compare cryptocurrency to other things and thereby, you know, reject it. There were not too many online resources to formally study cryptocurrency, but there was a course on Coursera by Princeton University, which I took and learned a little more about it. And in September of 16, which is a good 2 years after that, I felt adequately informed, knowledgeable, and highly compelled by this brand new world, the magical world of cryptocurrency, which often powers a public blockchain, which will decentralize everything and change the way we live.
Good. So, sir, if I tell you, no, I'm a layman who is not accepting the crypto market or blockchain technology, and you have to convince me with, you know, 2 to 3 points which are very relevant in this particular blockchain thing in a very simple manner. So what will be your take on it? Like, how will you move ahead to convince me for that?
Sure. So what I'll do is I'll go completely layman and simple, like you said. First, you know, we believe that there used to be a time, pre-money time, pre-monetary time in human history, where we would barter goods. I'm not aware whether there was such a time, but let us assume there was. If you think about the barter system, it is somewhat elegant in the fact that if I have something, maybe I'm a farmer and I grew something and I want something else, I just exchange it. So you don't have to go through an intermediate system of money and storage and financial institutions and banks. The problem with the barter system was that it was logistically a nightmare, because I would have to find somebody who at the exact same time wants what I have and wants to give me what they have, etc. And hence was not practical. This must have led to markets, etc., where people would swap. However, in the digital world, it may be possible to actually do something the equivalent of barter, which means exchange of value without necessarily coming into a monetary system. One, such a system could be done digitally, and because we don't want a central authority to control it, it could be done over the blockchain. Second, as I introduced the concept of decentralization and central authority, Here's the thing. Today, if you were to ride a hail a cab such as an Uber or an Ola in India, you think about it, you don't call the cab company. The driver does not have to call the cab company to get you as the rider. It is software which is connecting the two of you. In fact, if you have a complaint and need customer support, most people don't even know any number or any place where they can go and do it, which is also happening through online mechanisms. That's great. Likewise, if you take the case of banks, today there are digital banks which don't have a single branch or outlet. If we have reached a point where things can be done completely online with the help of a program or software, why do we need the entity either? As in, why do we need an Uber or an Ola or a XYZ bank? Why can't it be just a software that is running? Maybe the time has come. That would be the second thing. And the third thing is that whenever there is a system of money, as in the present form of money, regardless of whether it's a dictatorship, socialist country, communist country, or democracy, or what have you, the fact is there's a set of people we have who either rule upon us or represent us or are chosen by us, appointed by us, who are making all of our money decisions. And in every government, you know, the polity, that is you and I, are always suspicious about the motivation of such people, whether they are necessarily working in my best interest. In light of that, wouldn't it be great if either the policy of money, the monetary policy, were openly known, which means it was rules-based, which means it was a computer program, as opposed to made by a few set of experts, or if it were not based on rules, then it should be something that I can also vote in. Last example, when you think of any sufficiently large system, leave alone a large system like a country, where we have states, we have members of parliament, legislative assembly, etc., etc., who make decisions for us. It could be either even a small apartment complex, which will have its own committee and secretary and chairman, etc. Because we believe that everybody can't participate in every decision. It has to be the representatives who do that. Well, that is true. Or should I say that was true? Because I believe that in the present digital world, where everybody is walking around with a digital device which is connected to the internet, why not just let people decide? So, for example, if the parliament of a country has to decide on a certain legislative action, as in, should this happen or should this not happen, we are trusting a few dozen to a few hundred people who are representing us to make that decision. Why should I not make that decision myself? Why should I not vote on everything? This may seem operationally nightmarish, but you know what? With technology, it may be possible. So once again, these central authorities that we have created to facilitate the system may be an obsolete structure in some cases. All of these things are solvable in the way I have described using the blockchain paradigm. And to keep it decentralized, we need to have a token that powers it, governs it, and creates the right incentives.
Very well explained, sir. And I can, I can go forward with this thought and I can accept it that, all these benefits will be very helpful for the society and our economy also. But now when we move towards the regulation part, the governments are not accepting. I think only one country who accepted it was El Salvador. And they, apart from that, no one wants to accept it. So I just want to ask you why, like, the government is not regulating the cryptocurrency as of now in India.
So before I tell you about the direct answer to your India question, let me tell you that El Salvador has accepted Bitcoin as legal tender, which is not to say that the other whatever 180, 190 countries have not accepted, because many, if not most of the advanced economies are accepting it as an activity that citizens can do. For example, openly, people in the US are owning cryptocurrency. In fact, Coinbase, which is one of the most valuable exchanges in the world, is listed on the stock exchange. So if there was a regulatory hassle or lack of acceptability, we would not have had so many customers and a large exchange listed in the US. Likewise, in several other territories, including Singapore. But you are right, the governments definitely have some misgivings and hesitation. And I think that these fundamentally arise from three factors. Number one is that there is the risk that their sovereign currency might be undermined. I don't know if you can hear a dog barking in the background. That, by the way, is my golden retriever. His name is Bitcoin. So as you can see, I'm all in. If my dog is called Bitcoin, I've just shut the door so you're not disturbed with it. But so I'm all in. But coming back to what I was saying, first is that the domestic currency would get undermined. Second is that there could be a leakage of taxation because, the system of banks and other formal systems of finance that have evolved are not involved in you know, a peer-to-peer blockchain, the government can fear that, you know, they wouldn't know who is making how much money or tracking it down, and taxation could be a problem. And third, of course, is because of some level of anonymity, which, you know, in privacy coins might be very high, but in most other coins, it's not that high. But some level of anonymity, there's the fear is that, you know, so far, whenever lawmakers as well as law enforcement agencies have had to look at problems, they often follow the money. Here, there might be anonymity barriers to do that. The good thing is that these issues are addressable. So I think that different countries are going to take different amounts of time and different approaches before they come up with some sort of way to deal with these problems. India is facing its own set of problems and, you know, decision-making hassles. We had a law, a draft law that was drafted, which was going to be very, very negative for cryptocurrency. There was news that that was going to be tabled in the previous session of Lok Sabha because we saw it in the agenda. But luckily, it was never tabled. So I think that pretty much like if you think about it, we had Life Insurance Corporation as the only life insurance company in India for the longest time. We had Unit Trust of India as the only mutual fund in India for the longest time. Only government companies could issue allow you access to the internet in the form of VSNL or BSNL, etc. So India does have a history of, for the longest time, having, you know, government doing things without letting the private sector participate. But the good news is that eventually we do open up. We do have social media, we do have internet access, we have, you know, digital wallets, etc., etc. So I'm quite hopeful that it is just a matter of time. It is relatively conservative of our policymakers to go slow on this. But yeah, that's how it is.
Right. And so you also, you know, you were part of, like you were the CEO and former CEO of JEP, the crypto exchange, right? So you were also heading an exchange in India. So what were the challenges you were facing and why it like compelled you to, you know, quit it, and it was not, it was that challenging that you were not able to, you know, sustain in that particular thing?
So two things. One, very interestingly, I became the CEO of Zepay. I remember that it was 13th March 2018. And the Reserve Bank of India's declaration came like barely like 2 weeks later. So for all practical purposes, I ran Zepay only when it was a global organization. So it was just a few days. Of course, then they gave us 3 months. So what happened is that if you think about all the exchanges which were popular at that point of time, whether small or big, they were Zepay, there was Unocoin, there was CoinEx, there was BitZozo, there was Coinom, etc. Interestingly, every one of them shut shop sooner or later. I think probably Unocoin didn't, but frankly, it went very, very low on its business volumes. So most of them did not ever come back. The only one who came back, I think, was Zepay. I must list that Unocoin was always there, to the best of my knowledge. So what happened is that the ones who were old, which means they were a few years old already, were facing a lot of scrutiny from law enforcement or, you know, the establishment, etc., and they were unable to continue business. Interestingly, some of the other exchanges which had just started at that time or started even a little after that, they did not have to face the same scrutiny that the pre-existing ones had to. So the pre-existing ones, most of them shut down, frankly. Some of them tried to go abroad. Names that come to mind are Zepay, BitZozo. I don't remember all the other names. And the new ones, because they did not face the same regulatory hurdles at that point of time, though eventually I have no doubt that they must also have faced stuff, came back and took over the market. And I think did a great job of growing the market.
Right. So, sir, as a customer, if I, you know, think about the current crypto exchanges, which are VertiRex, CoinDCX, so many traders are, you know, investing with the help of those crypto exchanges. So should we worried about the same scenario like in the later part of 2020s, and because we never know like what kind of regulation will be coming. So are our money secure in those exchanges?
So I think that whether your money is secure is not a challenge of regulation. Even earlier, for example, even earlier when exchanges shut down or went out or slowed down or whatever, none of the investors and none of the exchanges lost money. Either because of the absence of a bank account, money got blocked for some time, but then that was released, or you know, they may have been forced to take their money or coin away. It is not as if the shutting down had ever let any of the customers down. So to that extent, I think even the current most famous exchanges, I don't have that worry at all. In fact, I am the customer of some of the exchanges that you listed, the new ones. So that is not my worry. If you have to worry about any exchange, it should be around the fact or issues related to technology, security, etc., which is why people who are in crypto often advocate that crypto owners should hold their own coins in their own wallets, etc. But that is not the question you ask. From the regulatory point of view, even if an extremely bad regulation came in, I don't even want to predict what that extremely bad regulation could be like, because I don't think it will come, and I also pray that it doesn't. But even then, it is not as if investors' wealth will just be taken away. There will be an opportunity for them to withdraw. There will be an opportunity for them to, you know, deal with the situation. Of course, market sentiments may be affected, hence prices may be affected, but that's a separate problem.
Got it, sir. Okay, so moving towards one of the famous cryptocurrency, which is Matic, known as Polygon. So what is your take on it, which is a first, you know, cryptocurrency based out of India, and it is growing rapidly and everyone is very excited to, you know, let it grow. So yeah, how do you think about it and what is the future of Matic according to you?
So, you know, having started as a scaling solution for Ethereum, which it continues to be, it has eventually become many things, right? It has its own chain, it is a POS, it's now set up Matic ecosystem, DAO, and so many other things. I think that what one has to give Matic a lot of credit is that it has done three things very, very right. Number one, unlike other platforms, which of course present a service to the customer, as obviously every business would, Matic has actually, to the best of my understanding, actually carried the entire crypto market, especially the Ethereum ERC-20 part of it, on its own shoulders. And I think that Ethereum itself would not have been as great as it is had there been no Matic. So that's number one. Number two, I think on the business and decision-making front, on the partnerships front, on the direction front, on the prioritization, on the focus areas, Matic has been exceptional. As in, I'm a huge fan. I must point out for huge disclosure that I am an advisor to one of the founders of Matic for about 1 year now. But that apart, I feel that there are very few organizations I have seen, probably even none, that have made a series of, which is a large number of, good business decisions. Because, you know, either people go overboard by trying to do too many things at the same time and dilute themselves, or they get stuck to the knitting and do the old thing. I think Matic has been the only organization I know of which is a perfect balance. And third and final, the level of innovation and acceptance and partnership that you see coming out of Matic is unparalleled. As in, you know, it's like I recently tweeted, I think a few days ago, that major positive business developments, you know, where you possibly would have heard like one announcement every 3 to 6 months, in Matic's case, you are hearing it every few days. So they have got their business engine, partnership engine, ecosystem engine going very, very well. So that is my opinion. I'm proud that it came out of India. I'm proud to be associated, however directly or indirectly, with it. And I'm proud for all the numbers they have achieved and become the first Decacon and stuff. Not enough praise can ever be given to them.
Wow, sir. That's great. So, sir, do you think Ethereum will beat Bitcoin in the near future? That's
random. So the flippening... Now here's the thing, just this morning I was seeing Bitcoin, it was at about a 40+% dominance, and Ethereum was at around 18, which means distinctly less than 50%, while at some point of time it had actually crossed 50%. Now here is the thing, Ethereum, you know, if you were to be totally dispassionate, Ethereum does have some serious advantages over Bitcoin. But when you think about the fact that adoption, stability, store of value are huge functions of cryptocurrency in the way it exists currently, Bitcoin is unparalleled. So this dilemma will always remain. Having been a Bitcoin-only person for the longest time, over the past year or so, I have become very open-minded to Ethereum. I think that there is a good chance the flippening will happen. Like a year ago, I would not have believed it. But now I think there is a chance. And I don't think it will happen anytime soon, because what happens is that there's the London hard fork, whether it is the, you know, the upcoming proof of work turning to proof of stake, etc. People are over expecting, you know, what will happen, the outcomes that occur. For example, forget what is being discussed about the London hard fork now. But in the 2-3 months preceding that, whenever we would complain of high gas fees, which for your you know, listeners who don't know, it is basically high transaction fees. People were saying, oh, let the London hard fork come, the gas fees problem will be solved. It was not solved. In fact, the average gas fees has been higher post the London hard fork than it was before. So, and now, of course, they're saying, no, it was not meant to reduce gas fees. That may have been one of the outcomes, but that is not what it was designed for. So I think people do over-expect from Ethereum, because in Ethereum, everything is possible because it can be programmed in a different way, you know, the concept of smart contracts, which while they may be possible in Bitcoin, they are not possible that elegantly. Of course, Bitcoin itself is evolving. Taproot is around the corner, which is a modification or an evolution. I don't know. I feel that just like we overexpected from the evolution of Ethereum protocol, I think we are overexpecting from the evolution of Bitcoin protocol also. And when the Lightning Network, which was a very fast payment system built on top of Bitcoin, had come, several of us, I must say, including me, thought that payments would never be the same again. But the Lightning Network did not really take off for all practical purposes. So I think, yes, short answer to your question, I think that in some more time, there could be a flipping where Ethereum has a greater market cap. Please note, this does not mean price, okay? Because that's a different story. But I think Ethereum may have a greater market cap than Bitcoin.
Very well explained, sir. And so moving towards a very important question for all the listeners who are mostly students. So what are the career opportunity in the blockchain technology for the non-tech and tech students?
For the tech students, I think it is obvious because obviously there's a lot of programming to be done. And the programming in many cases is not extraordinarily difficult because Solidity is an easy language. Everything tends to be open source, so you can see what others have done, etc. But at the same time, the value you are creating is huge. Also, the opportunity for what else has to be built is huge. So, for example, let us say in the mobile operating system space, we have iOS, which Apple uses, that is iPhone uses, and there's Android, which is otherwise very popular. Which new operating systems of mobile phones are coming up nowadays? The answer is none. There may be some attempts here and there, but basically, these large big boys are here to stay. The same is not true about the technology in the blockchain space, because I find, for instance, that even today, new layer one technologies, layer one are like Bitcoin, Ethereum, etc. New layer one technologies are coming up, right? So that means a lot more engineering work has to be done. That gives opportunity. Moving slightly towards the non-technical part, but still remaining in the technical space, I would say that product, the area of product management, etc., is huge. While it requires, ideally requires some knowledge of technology, but it does not involve development, coding, etc. And focus is more on the functionality, the usability, the security workflow of the actual product, which means it is a mix between tech and business. I think that is going to be a very big area once technology starts stabilizing. Even now it is, but it'll get bigger. And then come the business aspects. For example, in my response to you about what I think about Matic, I told you that, you know, Matic has been making some amazing business decisions and executions. Think about it. There's nothing technical or even necessarily product oriented about it. It was good business. So for the business people, for the analysts, for the marketers, I think that when we are at a point where DeFi, which is decentralized finance, has a bare $100 billion under its you know, value that is locked, which, for example, could be like a, just to give you an analogy, in one country, let's call it India, there could be one bank, which could be a small bank, even that has more than 100 billion. So now when you're talking for global decentralized finance, I think that the 100 billion reaching a trillion is just a matter of, like, as in, frankly, could happen in a year, maybe 1.5 years. So we definitely need business people who are making this happen. We need marketers, we need managers, we need lawyers, we need all of those people. So the opportunity is phenomenal. Because at present, there's a lot of money in the system. Investors' money, customers' money, value locked in protocols, etc. The money that is there to earn in one's career also is substantial. Having said that, I'll also strike a word of caution. The caution is that at this point of time, we are completely in the fairy tale period of cryptocurrency. It means everything is going right. People get some tip to buy a particular coin. They buy it, and without necessarily there being any sense, the coin just increases in value. So it's almost as if you can throw money in the direction of cryptocurrency and you become rich. Same seems true for marketing. Like somebody may know nothing much except for, you know, posting some rather silly memes and tweets and messages on Telegram. They are also getting ambassadorship or other opportunities, which is great. As in, I'm happy that for them. The only thing is these things are not sustainable. And soon, some of these really easy, very low value opportunities will disappear. At that point of time, you better have skilled yourself. You better have understood things, developed more abilities, and be ready to perform at in situations where you provide higher value to the organization. If you do that, I think this will be a great career opportunity.
Right. And sir, if any student want to learn more about cryptocurrency, what are the right sources where they can find, you know, the right kind of courses?
So the thing is that there are many courses available today. Many of them are actually quite good. My problem is twofold. Number one is that some of these, for example, even on YouTube, there are like great videos available for free. I know this gentleman, Andreas Antonopoulos. I have talked to him a few times. I think that his videos are absolutely fabulous. They are not as interesting as some of the influencers' YouTube video are, but they are really educational, as well as he doesn't sell you anything. He's not selling a course or a product or shilling a coin. So you also feel very comfortable. But despite that, I must tell you that whenever you try to go and find out about crypto, whether in course form, YouTube form, etc., the market is flooded with people who are trying to give you investment advice, even though they may not call it investment advice. And a lot of that investment advice is not just garbage, because garbage would mean it has zero value. It is actually dangerous and toxic, because there is usually an agenda that the person who is making it has. You know, they might be promoting an affiliate program, they might be shilling a coin, they might be paid by somebody to promote something, etc. So you have to just guard against that, because some of these are very compelling. As in, I watch a video accidentally because YouTube throws it in my face, and somebody is trying to tell me why some coin is so good. I actually sometimes also say, hey, let me find out more what they're talking about. Luckily, I know enough to not fall for this. But some of these are very compelling. So when you are on the path of education, just be on the path of education. Don't try to listen to people who are trying to sell you something.
Very well said, sir. And I think this will help a lot of students. And sir, this is the last piece of question from my side, and also an investment advice. According to you, what should be the right coin in which like new traders or new investors should invest? And market is very volatile. So whether one should trade or invest?
So, you know, you asked me two questions, really, which coin and trade versus invest. So there is one which I can answer with a high degree of confidence, which is the second one. That is trade or invest. The answer is invest. The tendency to, you know, churn your portfolio, buy, sell, because a lot of us believe that when we look at a graph which shows how price is moving, we somehow have divine insight into figuring out where it is going. You know, for example, suppose the graph was high and it is continuously falling. Some people will look at it and say, oh, you know what? It's going down, man. Let's sell. It's gone. Some others might say, oh, it's fallen down so much, it's bound to come up. Both of them in their head believe that they have done the right thing. Well, both might be equally stupid, but one of them will be proven right. Either it will go down, or it will move sideways, or it will, you know, rise. As in, something has to happen. So some people, regardless of how arbitrary and erroneous their decision might be, will be proven right. Now they feel they are geniuses. Especially in a market where on the whole prices are going up, like crypto over the last 18 months or so, everybody has become a genius. Same is true in stock markets, right? And when markets just go up, everybody feels that, oh, I'm such a genius. These things don't last. They cannot last, right? And there will be corrections. So I don't know how somebody, as in, I have attempted trading since the early 90s when I became, as in, I completed my education in the year 93, I've done all of that. So I personally believe that yes, some traders become extraordinarily rich, far richer than any investor could. However, there's a huge element of randomness in that. If you have that divine insight, go for it. I would not advise it. So yes, invest, not trade. As far as which coin, first, even if I had an answer, I would not tell you. not because I want to be rich alone and not to make you rich. It is just that, see, what we are trying to do here, it's like the same as saying, which, give me a share market tip, as in, you know, which company will do well, etc. Of course, I have my views, you know, because DeFi is growing, the NFT space is growing, specific projects are growing, specific business models are growing. And based on that, I every day, like, for example, I slept at 6 a.m. this morning. I was up the whole night because I was studying a particular area within the DeFi space, a very, very small area where there are hardly any coins. I think like a max of 30 coins. Now, 30 sounds like a lot, but it's 30 out of 11,500. And out of those 30, also about 4 or 5 were famous. And this is an area I had not studied. So I was up the whole night studying it. And I'm a little optimistic about it. Not that it will give the highest reward, but given that it is also in the relatively lower risk space of crypto, I think that the risk to reward ratio would probably be very desirable. Having said that, I've just spent one full night thinking about it, right? As in reading about it, finding out who is doing what is the business model, how much money is being earned, what is the profitability and stuff. So by the way, tomorrow my answer will be completely different. Like, I was very positive about NFT, then I thought I don't understand them at all. I'm again positive, but I feel that the current models of NFTs, where people are basically creating arbitrary JPEGs and selling them, may also, you know, be a thing that does not sustain itself in the same way, etc., etc. I feel that my own thoughts keep evolving, so there's no way I'm giving anybody advice, because somebody may be listening to it tomorrow, by which time my mind would have changed. But I would just say this. Here is the problem with all investment. While investment has two fundamental legs that it stands on, one is, what is the potential for reward? If I put a money in a fixed deposit, how much will I earn? If I buy stock, what is the likelihood? Cryptocurrency, what is the likelihood? So this is a reward. Coupled with that is the risk. What I have seen happening most is that some investors are almost completely beholden by the risk element, and they don't really consider reward. And they're like, no, I won't do crypto. I won't buy shares. Shares is like gambling, etc. Some others are so completely captured by return that, oh my God, I'll buy this coin which has a picture of an animal on its symbol and it will double because some famous person tweeted about it. And they just ignore the risk. I think this is the problem. Always focus on the reward, but always keep the potential risk in mind. I think that is the only way to do it. And I have been struggling. I have been an investor for many decades now. I hope your listeners will also go through the same struggle and come out victorious.
Very well said, sir. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for, you know, giving so much informative and detailed answer. And this is going to help a lot of students. So lastly, thank you so much for taking out time and joining this podcast, sir. It was amazing talking to you. It really means a lot.
Thank you very much, Tarun. Thanks for this.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that's all from today's episode. I hope you liked it. In case if you have any suggestion or feedback, you can reach out to me at various social media handles. I'm adding the link in the description. Until next time, stay safe and stay tuned.